Okay, there we are, back in business. Okay. So let's carry on. We have been looking at yesterday the Upakilesa Sutta, which shows how to overcome all those defilements of the mind and then entering samadhi. But one of the things we have not really looked at yet is how that actually works. How to do the meditation practice, what sort of meditation you should be doing. So next I want to look at more the actual process of meditation itself. And of course one of the main methods of meditation found in the suttas is anapanasati, which is the mindfulness of breathing. And what is interesting is that the Buddha himself used the mindfulness of breathing before his awakening as part of his practice. And this is what this sutta is about. And this is quite a profound sutta. It starts off with mindfulness of breathing, and then it goes on to all the results that arise from mindfulness of breathing, all the way to the very end of the path. And some of the things at the very end are very deep and profound, and I suppose for that reason also interesting. So we will certainly look at it. Not sure exactly how much detail, but we will check it out and see if we can gain something from that. This sutta is called the Simile of the Lamp, Padipopama Sutta, and it goes as follows. This is found in the Sanyutta Nikaya, the Connected Discourses of the Buddha, the 54th chapter, which is all on mindfulness of breathing, sutta number 8. Mendicants, when immersion, which is samadhi, due to mindfulness of breathing, is developed and cultivated, it is very fruitful and beneficial. How so? So here we have the expression samadhi due to mindfulness of breathing. And what that shows us is that the main purpose of mindfulness of breathing is actually to bring us to samadhi, this one-pointedness of mind, bringing the mind together. And when the Buddha says something is very fruitful and beneficial, the Buddha doesn't mince his words. The Buddha tends to be understated. So when he says that, you can take it means how to get to the very end of the Buddhist path. So now then we come to the standard exposition of mindfulness of breathing, which is a very beautiful exposition and very useful to have some insight into. So let's have a look at this. It's when a mendicant gone to the wilderness, or to the foot of a tree, or to an empty hut, sits down cross-legged, sets their body straight, and establishes mindfulness in front of them. Just mindful they breathe in, mindful they breathe out. So this is the standard beginning of mindfulness of breathing, how it is explained every time you come across it in the suttas, including in the Anapanasati Sutta itself, which is the main exposition of mindfulness of breathing. It always starts like this. And in many ways, this is perhaps some of the most important instructions in this sutta is found right here at the very beginning. Because remember, the idea of meditation is that it is largely an automatic process. And if it is an automatic process, then how we get started is very, very important. Once you get the starting point right, then the rest is automatic. Get the starting point wrong, and the automatic process doesn't actually work. So this matters enormously. And as you will see here, it starts off by saying, gone to the wilderness, aranyagato, to the foot of a tree, or an empty hut, sunyagaragato. So the idea here is that if you're going to do meditation in a deep way, and it's going to give the full results of the path of meditation, usually it happens in seclusion. All of these phrases here have to do with the idea of seclusion. Withdrawing from society. First of all, kaya viveka, the seclusion of the body, and then the citta viveka, which comes from that, this inclusion of the mind. One after the other. And so this does not mean that you cannot do any meditation in daily life. You can, but you cannot expect very profound results from the kind of ordinary meditation. Ordinary meditation in daily life can be very useful. It helps to stabilize the mind. It helps you to live well during your days, because your mind is kind of, you have a more positive outlook and these kind of things. So it can be very useful in daily life, but you cannot expect the results of the Anapanasati Sutta to really happen. This happens in seclusion. So occasionally, this is why I would recommend people sometimes to take some time out, to take a retreat somewhere, especially for those of you who are meditators, of course. Take a retreat somewhere, see what happens when you do that, and see if you are actually making progress on the path. One of the ways to decide whether you're making progress or not is to do a retreat, you know, once a year, once every 6 months or whatever, and then see if it deepens your meditation practice. You know progress is happening if your meditation is becoming more profound. And it is actually important on the path that we do measure our progress. Is it working or not, what we're doing? Yeah, it matters. Because if it isn't working, if you're not getting any results, then we need to take some kind of remedial measures. To ask ourselves, what is the problem? Is there something I'm not doing right? Can I improve something in my conduct, my practice? Yeah? All of these things. And you really only get to that if you know whether you're getting the results from the path or not. So sometimes going on a retreat can be helpful, because that gives you more clarity about what is happening. So you go to a place of seclusion and then you sit down. Yeah, it says here nisidati, which means you sit down. And so real meditation practice happens in the sitting posture, especially things like mindfulness of breathing. It is too subtle to do while walking, or usually can perhaps be done lying down, but lying down is not is more kind of dangerous. And then sitting, yeah, the snoring problem. So sitting is really the ideal posture for mindfulness of breathing. So you sit down, that's where it happens. How do we sit? Doesn't matter so much. Sit in a way that is comfortable. Remember, the idea here is to get the body, put the body to one side, get the body out of the way. That's kind of the idea. So being comfortable is what is most important. Not indulgent, but comfortable. There's a big difference between indulgence and comfort. Indulgence means you are enjoying the what is happening. Yeah, wow, this is so nice. Yeah, ooh. And before you, of course, that's not how meditation works. But comfortable, so that the body is not a problem. That's the idea. So whether you sit cross-legged, or you sit on a chair, or you sit leaning against the wall, or whatever you do, all of that is quite irrelevant, as long as you are at ease. It says, nisidati, it says, palangang abhujitva, having put the legs cross-legged, so that is kind of the ideal posture, but it's not a required posture. I know lots of people who get good meditation in all kinds of posture. The only posture I do not recommend, as I said the other day, is standing upside down on your head. Because I heard of a monk who did that, and he actually got some kind of nimitta, some bright light, while he was standing on his head, and it was a bad result. He kind of fell down and kind of found himself in a big kind of jumble on the floor, legs and arms kind of all over the place. And then we have Ujjung Kayang Panidaya. So this is setting the body straight. And the idea, of course, is that when your body is straight, you have more clarity usually. But that too is about time and place. So start off by relaxing, and then as your mind becomes clear, then you set your body straight. Yeah, this is words over here, body straight. Ujju is straight. Kaya is your body. Panidaya is like placing, or, you know, putting the body straight. And then the last one, which is the most important one here, is Parimukkang Satting Upatapetva. Satting, of course, is mindfulness. And Parimukkang is one of these words that is much debated what exactly it means. But I think the idea of in front here is pretty much right. In other words, in this time and space, here and now, is kind of sort of what it means. Yeah, in your immediate presence, both in time and space. And so this is kind of the critical one. You cannot really do mindfulness of breathing. You cannot really do any kind of meditation practice without having mindfulness established first. And this is why usually I recommend that when you do your meditation, you just relax, you allow things to be, you wait for the mindfulness to arise, you nudge the mind a little bit, because the mind needs a little bit of guidance, but not force, but just a bit of nudging. The idea of getting into a good mood, a good state or positive state of mind, where you feel good about yourself, you feel, you know, positive about your meditation, about yourself, about the environment, you feel at ease, you feel relaxed, you're not interested in the future, you realize that most of the future we think about is completely uninteresting anyway, you let go of that future, and you realize the future that is interesting is the one that I make now, simply by sitting in meditation. And once you get that, it starts to become really uninteresting to think about what you're going to do tomorrow and all these kind of things, because you realize actually that doesn't do anything here. That future is never created by thinking about it. And then you let go of the past. Letting go of the past will often mean things like forgiveness and understanding other people in the right way, not having any grudges and these kind of things. And in this way, you gently guide your mind. You nudge the mind in the right direction. And as you do that, what you find is that as you relax, mindfulness comes about. It's a little bit difficult on a retreat such as this, because it is not really fully intended to be a meditation retreat. This meditation is only a part of this. You can even say a minor part. But you really get to test these things when you go on a proper meditation retreat, where meditation is the main emphasis of the retreat. So remember this, and also remember that the idea of establishing mindfulness is something that we do throughout our daily existence. Whenever we live well, we do the right thing, we practice the first factors of the Noble Eightfold Path, then we are establishing mindfulness for the long run. I don't mean establishing mindfulness in the present, here and now. You always need a degree of mindfulness to even be able to live well. But what I mean is living well so that mindfulness becomes established in the long run. If you live your ordinary life really well, with kindness, with care, overcoming ill will, overcoming defilements, you will find that from 1 year to the next one, when you go on retreat, things will have changed. You will have more mindfulness, more ability to just stay in the present, and things actually will alter in your spiritual life. So this is why it is so important to live well in daily life, because it actually affects the entire spiritual path. It affects how you feel about yourself here and now, it affects your meditation ability, it affects your ability to develop wisdom down the track, and also, of course, it affects any rebirth that you may get down the track. So it affects everything, basically. It's extraordinarily important to live well. So this is how this comes about in the long run. And only then, when mindfulness is established, when you feel at ease, you feel the mind is present, you feel a sense of relaxed awareness, that is when mindfulness of breathing starts. And remember this idea of waiting for the breath. Don't go to the breath, because the moment you think you have to go to the breath, there will be a degree of grasping that breath. That is the whole idea of going for something, is that you grasp it. The moment you grasp the breath, the moment you try to hold it and try to keep it in your awareness, at that moment it's going to be uncomfortable. Because the whole idea of grasping is tight. It is uncomfortable. You can feel the tension within. The idea is to be relaxed with the breath. So even while you are watching the breath, you should have this idea of sitting in an armchair and just relaxing. The breath is there. You don't hold it. And because you don't hold it, the breath suddenly disappears and is gone. And that's okay. And then you just wait for the breath to come back again. If this is just a trick of the mind to not to go for the breath, and then you wait, the breath comes, then you are automatically doing mindfulness of breathing. There's nothing you have to do. You're automatically doing it because the breath has come back to you by itself. You're not doing it. Am I making any sense? Okay. good. Glad. So that's how it comes about. Yeah. And then we have this beautiful sentence here. Just mindful, he breathed in. Just mindful, they breathe out. Notice the little word just there. You see the Pali here, satova. This is two words, sati plus eva. And sati is mindfulness, and eva is like a little word that can mean a couple of different things, but the normal meaning of the word is just or only. Only mindful, he breathes in. Only mindful, he breathes out. And these little words are no coincidence. Sometimes they are coincidence, sometimes they are like fillers. They're just used to fill in the text to make it flow nicely. But in this case, it makes a lot of sense. Because the idea here is that all you have to do is to be mindful. There's no will required. Yeah, that's what I've been talking about before, some of these other suttas that say you don't use will in your meditation. Here is the same thing, no will. All there is mindfulness. All there is sitting back and allowing the process to happen. You don't do the process. That is why it is just mindful you breathe in, just mindful you breathe out. So this is the start of Anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. And now we come into the various stages of this practice. There's 16 stages to the Anapanasati Sutta. And so we're going to look at all of those and see how they work and how you go from one stage to the next one. And as we are going through this whole Anapanasati Sutta, we are essentially also doing the same work that we saw in the Upakilesa Sutta before, where you are abandoning the defilements of the mind. Here, the abandoning happens through the act of watching the breath. As you watch the breath, the defilements are abandoned automatically. Sometimes you need to contemplate a little bit to help, but a lot of the time it is also happens by default as you do that. Why is that the case? Just to give you an idea how that works. Most of the defilements that we have, especially defilements like desire and ill will, they need to be sustained to be able to stay in the mind. If you are desiring something, whatever that desire might be, the only way that that desire remains in the mind is because you are thinking about that object as desirable. You're seeing the good aspects of that object. The moment you are watching the breath, you are no longer focusing on that object. And because you're letting go of the object, the desire itself dies down. You're no longer fueling the desire because you're withdrawing your attention from the object that gives rise to desire. So by the mere fact of watching the breath, desires disappear. Gradually. Same thing with ill will. Ill will needs to be fueled to sustain itself. So if you take away the attention from the object that is the cause of the ill will itself will gradually disappear. So by the mere fact of being aware of the breath, actually the defilement starts to decline. But often it is not enough. Often there are underlying defilements that are much deeper, like attachments, for example, to the body, to the senses. But sometimes we need to do a little bit of contemplation as well. And I've talked about quite extensively before the contemplations of the five senses and these kind of things. And sometimes we need to do that to help this process, to give it a bit more power, if you like. And then sometimes you can overcome those problems, those blockages that get in the way on the path. This is especially for those of you who are really serious about meditation practice, because this is really the sort of requirements that makes this path work. Okay. So now we come to the 16 stages of Anapanasati. Anapanasati, ana in-breathing, pana out-breathing, sati, mindfulness. Breathing in heavily, they know I'm breathing in heavily. Breathing out heavily, they know I'm breathing out heavily. Uh-oh. Diga means long, but I think Diga means long, but I think his idea is that in the English idiom usually talks about heavy and light breathing. I think that's kind of the point here. So you could say long breath or heavy breath, you know, it's basically two sides of the same thing. But I realize that these steps are missing here, so I'm going to have to bring up another sutta that has all the steps in it, because otherwise we are going to have a problem. So let's see. 118, because I'd like to go through these steps. So here we are. This is the real sutta on mindfulness of breathing here. Okay, so here we are. So, breathing in heavily, they know I'm breathing in heavily, or long if you like. Breathing out heavily, they know I'm breathing out heavily. Breathing in lightly, or if you like short, they know I'm breathing in lightly. Breathing out lightly, they know I'm breathing out lightly. They practice like this. I'll breathe in, experiencing the whole body. They practice like this. I'll breathe out, experiencing the whole body. They practice like this. I'll breathe in, stilling the physical process. They practice like this. I'll breathe out, stilling the physical process. So these are the first four steps of the Anapanasati Sutta. And what we are seeing here, we're seeing that you are aware of the breath. Yeah. First of all, whether it is long and short or heavy and light, that's kind of the starting point here. This does not mean that you have to kind of focus on this specifically, whether it's heavy or light, but it just means that you are aware of the breath. You know the breathing is happening. Yeah, you know, and here, because all you have to know is one aspect of the breath, it's kind of a simple awareness of the breath, not a very complex one. You don't have the full awareness yet, it's just the awareness of one particular aspect. Heavy or light, you don't need much focus to be able to be aware of that. It starts with heavy, the long breath, and then the light, short breath, because that is often how the breath meditation is experienced. Yeah, it is experienced as long breath, and as you calm down a bit, it becomes more light or shorter after a while, once you start to settle down more. I think that is the main reason why you have that particular sequence. And so you know the breath here, yeah? They know, it says up here. And it doesn't, further down it says practice, but here it says no. And the difference is that at this point, because you're already mindful, you already know what is happening. You don't have to practice, you don't have to do anything. It's automatic that you know these things. This is not about making the breath long or short. Yeah? It is not your job to interfere with the breath. It is simply awareness of what the breath is like right there. That is all it is. And usually you are aware of the long breath first. So it's just awareness of the breath. You can even forget about the heavy and light. You're aware that the breath is there. Every breath. Then you go to the light breath. And then, once you have come to the light breath, then you have to start what is called here the practice. And the practice here means that it is not automatic that you get to this point. Yeah, it will take some time. Usually when you start watching the breath, you will not be very peaceful yet. The mindfulness will not be super strong. But as you practice, as you stay with the breath, the mindfulness tends to sharpen. Things become more peaceful. And this is what is meant by the practice here. Is the giving yourself time for things to calm down. It doesn't mean that you do this. It doesn't mean that you there's much to be done. It's just the ability to wait and to stand back and to be the passive observer. And that ability to be the passive observer, that is the practice in this case. And then you start recognizing what it says here, the whole body. And we'll come back to the meaning of the whole body in a second. In the meantime, let's do a little bit of meditation. We're talking about meditation, might as well do some meditation as well here. Okay, so any questions, please?
Regarding the awareness of the breathing,
yeah,
and we want to know the process, just let it run. But when noting it, do we label it like this is long? But to come to the conclusion that it's actually long or short, deep or light, it is after the breathing we are noting it. We are not willing it. So we can only know that it's long or short at the end of that breathing.
Yeah. Okay.
So
how
do we label it in the first place, and then do we note it at the end?
Okay. So the idea of labeling it is kind of one particular technique that is done in one of the Burmese systems of meditation practice. And I don't. This is not really what is meant by this sutta. It has been discussed by many people. It is merely an awareness of what is going. Pajanati, you understand things. You don't have to label it or to verbalize it or anything like that in your mind. Whether it's long or short also is not really the issue. It's not some judgment of the breath. You're trying to judge whether it's long or short or whatever. It's more simply the fact that you know each breath. So the reason why it says long and short, I think, is just that to be able to know long or short, you have to know every breath, right? So it is the idea that you are aware of every single breath that's going on. But there's no real need to know. The knowing is automatic anyway. It's not something that you have to do. It is automatic. If you are aware of what's going on and you have mindfulness, then if someone asks you, then you will actually be able to tell whether the breath is short or long. Hopefully no one asks you in the middle of meditation, but so you will. It will happen anyway. So your job is just really to be aware of one breath after the other. And the fact that it's long and short is actually completely incidental. It's not really important. It's just a way of saying that every breath should be known. That's what it means, really. The noting technique I wouldn't really recommend it, because it can become an obsession of the mind. Once you get used to it, you can't let go of the noting, and then you are stuck with all this verbalization, which actually becomes a hindrance for some people in the practice. And it doesn't really mean verbalizing. And this has been, I think, established quite well by scholars, that it doesn't mean that. It just means that you have awareness of what is happening here without actually saying anything here. Yeah.
Breathing in or breathing out, which one is more important?
Which one is more important, in or out? I think you have to do both, otherwise you're in trouble. If you only breathe out, whoa. Okay. Anyone else want to say anything? Yeah. Same person again, Bobby.
Ajahn, do we then note it at a particular spot?
Okay, that's another important point. Okay, thanks for asking that question. So this idea that you have to locate it at a particular spot comes from the commentaries. And the commentaries say that you should see the breath at the nasagga. Nasagga means the tip of the nose, quite literally. And so this is then becomes the standard interpretation from the commentaries. But I follow Ajahn Brahm's technique, which is not to look at the breath in a particular spot. And that is because it is breath meditation, not body meditation. So you are just aware of the breath. If you close your eyes, you don't really have to look at it anywhere. You can just close your eyes and you know the breath, even though you don't have a particular place where you know it. You just have awareness of the breath. So the general awareness of the breath is more relaxed. If you try to kind of pin it down on the tip of the nose too early, maybe when your mindfulness becomes very strong, you can do that. But initially, just have a general awareness of the breath, wherever it is. Just know where it's long or know where it's short. Don't worry about where you know that. Just know the fact that it's long or short. Yeah? That's what I would recommend. And this is, the whole idea here is the idea of parimokkhang. Parimokkhang is this word which is, again, has been studied a lot by various people who are into these kind of studies. You see, the word is just, we just saw it before up here, parimokkhang, sati upotapetva, having established mindfulness, parimokkhang. And the meaning seems to be something like in front rather than specifically the tip of the nose or something like that. In front of the nose, in front in the sense of in general, in the presence, in the here and now, in front of you. I mean, the breath is like in front of you, right? Because it's kind of an awareness. I mean, it could be on the nose, it can be anywhere really, but I would not focus narrowly down in that way. Yes?
Then, when we breathe in and we breathe out, right? Yeah. Do we follow the breath?
Do you follow the breath? You initially just know the breath. Each breath, you know it. It's enough just to be aware. Initially, your mindfulness is not going to be that sharp. So it takes a while before you can follow it properly. So initially, just aware, one breath, next breath, one is long, one is short, or whatever. I think this is why they use the ideas of long and short, because it means that you have to be aware of every breath to be able to know whether it's long or short. Even though whether it's long or short actually is quite irrelevant. So just knowing each breath, you catch each breath. And then as your mindfulness improves, then you start knowing the whole breath. And the whole breath means following it all the way, right? Or the whole thing. Or focusing in one spot and knowing the whole in and out through that spot. That's another way of following it, if you like. Yes?
Yeah, but I've got two questions. One is regarding the word parimokkhang. Bhante Ponaji interpreted this parimokkhang, according to the Malay word mokkhang, from the word mokkha, which means the face. So, say around the face, the face, in the face we have five senses.
Yeah.
So, he interpreted this parimokkhang means focusing on the five senses.
Okay.
So I'm not sure whether this is a way to interpret it all.
I think the mokkhang has two meanings. Mokkhang means face, or it can also mean mouth, you see. Yeah. So that depends a little bit on the context, which one it means. And pari is a prefix, which usually means around, and that's usually true, but not always. So this is a bit tricky to determine exactly what it means. But generally speaking, yes, around the face is true. Basically that's true. But the five senses, I would say, not really, because it actually specifically says you are aware of the breath, right? That's what it says in this one here. You're aware of the long breath and the short breath. And you don't need all the five senses to be aware of the breath. I mean, it's not going to be much sound. You're not going to see anything, right? You're not going to taste very much. The main thing is the physical contact of the body. That's how you basically know the breath. You cannot really know the breath through the five senses, because this is about anapanasati, mindfulness of breathing. It's the knowledge of the breath that is important. How do you know the breath? Through the sense of touch. But around the face, I generally agree with that. That's like in front of you, right? Face in front of you right here. Same kind of meaning here.
Okay. Second question is regarding the sutta that you touched on yesterday, and then one to it, the corruption.
See,
I develop immersions while placing the mind and keeping it connected.
Yeah.
And without placing the mind, just keeping it connected. So you're referring to vitaka vichara.
Yeah.
Is it placing the focus on the light or placing the focus on the breath?
You are beyond the breath at this point. Yeah, you're even beyond the light. You have, when you enter the dhyana, it's like the light itself disappears, and you kind of enter the light, or you fall into the dhyana, and it's just a state of bliss, really. Yeah. And so what the focus is there is just the bliss. You're focusing on the bliss, and you're attracted to the bliss. And that's what we talk about, the wobble of the mind. The mind is kind of drawn to the bliss, then it releases a little bit. There's a slight wobble, so you can see the bliss itself is wobbling a little bit, becoming stronger, a bit weaker. And that wobble is what we call vitakka vichara in the first jhana. It's a very slight movement of the mind. Second jhana, the vitakka vichara is completely gone. This is the very last bit of vitakka vichara in samsaric existence. The very last bit, and you can imagine it would be very refined. It would not be thought in the ordinary sense of the word. It would be more like the final movement of the mind, if you like. Okay, let's carry on a little bit, and we'll come back to some more questions soon.